please listen carefully.
Well, hello, world. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
We're a part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
6 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by our award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, in our 46th show, Christy, 46 of these we've done, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, how did quarantine happen and we're still doing this worthy podcast. Today is Tuesday, May 12th, 2020.
Very cool, Summers. Well, May 12th. I can't believe it. It's been just about just a day after 2 months since everything was declared a pandemic. I think it was March 11th. That's when they stopped the NBA season. That's when they started really shutting things down. That's when California got put into lockdown. It's been an intense couple of months and it's been an interesting time. Definitely interesting time.
I remember on March 11th saying to our key investor and host of Solutions News Radio, Ronaldo Brutico, hey, should I take my stuff? Do you think you're going to close the office on Monday? And he looked at me and he said, do you think we should close the office on Monday? And I said, I don't know. My kids' school's closed. And so I didn't take all of my stuff. I took some of my stuff, but not all of my stuff. And lo and behold, the next Monday, quarantine began. And that's why you are currently sitting recording this podcast wearing my trusty headphones.
Yes, I live close to the office, so I was able to go back in and grab a few of your things, which I have for you. If you want to ever meet up, we can do a contactless exchange at some point.
All right, let's put it on the calendar. I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you too. Well, here are today's top solutions. Starting out with one from our lifestyle section. 5 healthy habits we can take into post-pandemic life. Working from home, no social contact, and limited shopping have all made us think about how we need to do things differently, now and in the future. If you weren't an online shopper before, you've had to learn. If you've never asked for help, this is a time where it's perfectly normal to reach out to others, and people are willing to help. There are many things we won't miss about life in quarantine, but there are definitely some healthy habits that we can take with us as we slowly prepare for a post lockdown life. Here are 5 of those healthy habits. 1, more flexible working. Many teams have been able to function as normal, fulfilling their responsibilities as they adopt a home working life. Managers have introduced online messaging systems, conference calls, and have found new ways of asking staff to account for the work they complete each day. While some fine-tuning is definitely still needed, it's expected that remote working will continue for at least a third of businesses after this lockdown has eased. 2, continuing kindness. Since the pandemic, there's been a more authentic and genuine kindness around. Often it comes out in offering to pick up someone's shopping, lending old toys, which have been sanitized, of course, asking complete strangers how they're doing, and listening and caring about the answer. These are all acts of kindness that should stick around after this lockdown is eased. 3, helping community. The number of voluntary groups set up to help people isolating or feeling lonely has really opened up human compassion. For the first time in a long time, there are reams of groups offering their skills or a listening ear to help and support others. People are showing that there is no need to wait for the government to step in and help. In fact, it might be a fruitless wait anyway. People have great power in numbers, and it shows that action can happen when they come together for a common cause. 4, bringing old hobbies to life. So many people are embracing crafts that they used to love and for many reasons haven't been doing, either because they miss a hobby they used to have, want to learn a new skill, and because they now have the time to spend on it. What's more, arts are proven to have a great impact on mental health and well-being. At a time when many are stuck at home and many are alone, arts and crafts are very uplifting in this time of crisis. A side note, I just was listening to I think she's a showrunner for Grey's Anatomy and some other really popular shows, talk about her experience taking a singing lesson online and how this opened things up for her. She got back to singing and was able to sing after an hour with this online lesson, which cleared away the sadness and the negative emotions she'd been having. shopping and really brought some joy into her life. So again, old hobbies. If you used to sing, sing. If you used to dance, dance. Writing. I'm starting to journal again. That's my old hobby. Number 5, getting more from food. Restrictions on shopping and food shortages have meant people have really had to think about alternative ways of making their food last. Rather than pop to the shop for more bread every single day, more people have been experimenting with making it their own. Leftovers are being frozen for the next day. Alternatives are being found for food like pasta, with quinoa and couscous seeing a rise in sales. And we're all thinking about what to do with all of our dried beans.
I know, suddenly black-eyed peas are not just a New Year's thing. We were luxurious over the weekend and certainly for Mother's Day as far as ordering food. And so yesterday when we were thinking about meals, my oldest daughter said, oh, I just kind of want to order something. And I said, okay, let's figure out how to make something. We shouldn't just get in the habit of ordering just because it was fun over the weekend. I think that there are a lot of good things that we can carry forward, Christy.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an opportunity for us to all think about what are the habits that we want to keep from this. I think food is definitely a big one. But even for me, journaling and how important that's been in the last period of time in helping me get centered.
Absolutely. I can't wait to get back to journaling. I think I'll probably have some available hands and time in about 2 years. When do you, your son's older, you got 2 years to go.
Well, it depends on how much help you're getting in your house.
True.
Or if you can take him to school. It's really not until then.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's pitching in with all they've got, but we are pretty tight on hands here. Our next solution comes from the business section of the Optimist Daily. This coffee company protects the rainforest and promotes education. Now, everyone knows how much I love my coffee, so this story is particularly appealing to me. When Goran Goza Coffee launched in 2015, its goal was to restore the rainforest of Mozambique's Mount Gorongosa region that had been ravaged by a 17-year civil war and institute sustainable farming methods for locals to support their family and their communities. Now, the company is turning its attention toward education and aims to put every young woman who lives in the Gorongosa National Park zone through high school within the next 15 years. That's amazing. The company's coffee sells for $17 a bag, and the profits go towards wildlife conservation, preventing deforestation, and now toward building 100 schools, giving 20,000 girls access to after-school programs, and providing 500 high school scholarships for girls in the community where the farmers producing the coffee live. More than half of girls enrolled in primary school in Mozambique drop out by the fifth grade, and only 11% continue to secondary education. It costs $500 a year to send a girl to secondary boarding school in Mozambique, but most of the families in the region make less than $1 a day. The coffee company is also supporting teacher training and runs an after-school club to offer a safe space for women to discuss relevant issues in their communities, including sexual health and gender-based violence. Eric Wilburn, director of Gorongosa Coffee, was inspired to start the community-conscious company after volunteering with the Peace Corps in the region. He hopes to collaborate with the community leaders and create holistic community development. Women's education is a key solution to creating a more equitable society and lifting families out of poverty. Christy, my master thesis work was in Ethiopia, working with an organization called Project Mercy, who did not only this education and health development, but they also worked with farmers to help them have more sustainable farming methods, as well as sourcing fair trade coffee deals. So this story, not only my love of coffee, but also my love of this kind of work, really hits home for me. As I sit in my home office and look around at all of the things that I've collected from my travels to that area in Ethiopia, as well as in Tanzania, I love this story. Yeah. I will definitely be ordering some Gorongosa coffee today.
That's wonderful. And I think it touches on poverty and the importance of women's education. It also touches on climate change. And one of the biggest things we can do from Paul Hawkins' drawdown book is encourage more women's education, girls' education. And that lifts an entire economy up. It leads to so many different positives for society. This is a great story. You know that I've stocked up on coffee. That's one of the dried beans that I'm trying to figure out how to use.
I love it.
All right. For our next story from the environment section on the Optimist Daily, a look inside the quest for endlessly circular plastics. The Eastman Chemical Plant in Kingsport, Tennessee appears to be just another chemical manufacturing facility. Sprawling over 900 acres are hundreds of buildings and countless miles of pipes, conveyors, distillers, cooling towers, showers, valves, pumps, compressors, and controls. It doesn't exactly look or feel particularly noteworthy, but something extraordinary is going on at this Eastman Chemical plant. Two breakthrough processes to turn waste plastics of all kinds back into new plastics continuously with no loss in quality. Last year, the company announced two major initiatives which provide a glance into the possibilities of circular plastic. One, carbon renewal technology, or CRT. This technology breaks down waste plastic feedstocks to the molecular level before using them as building blocks to produce a wide range of materials and packaging. The company claims this enables waste plastics to be recycled an infinite number of times without degradation of quality. Number two, polyester renewal technology, or PRT. Here we see waste polyesters from landfills and other waste streams being transformed into raw material that the company claims are indistinguishable from polyester produced from fossil fuel feedstocks. With both CRT and PRT, hard-to-recycle plastics can be recycled an infinite number of times, says Eastman, creating products that can claim high levels of certified recycled content, a true closed loop. Both technologies are yet to hit the market, so it's still too soon to call them a success. Still, they represent a story about a legacy industrial company seeking to reinvent itself by simultaneously addressing the climate crisis, the scourge of plastic waste, and the need to accelerate resource efficiency to meet the material needs of 10 billion people that we will have on this planet by mid-century. If it works, this old line corporate icon could find itself a leading light in the emerging circular economy. For a deep dive into Eastman's moonshot goal, please have a look at the long read from Green Biz writer Joel Makeover, which is on our website. You can get to that link from the story on the Optimist Daily. And I love this, Summers, because the need to really clean up our whole waste process where we just throw things away and think that we're done with it, that has to go somewhere. And if you can actually take these plastics down and reuse them by bringing them back to their chemical makeup without loss of quality, then we actually can have a place to recycle these plastics.
Exactly. It's reused in some format. I am feeling some optimist view coming in here, Christy. I think we need to do an optimist view on all of the circular economy stories that we have written. I'm going to pitch that to editorial. Maybe you guys agree with me, but I think this dialogue really is solution-based thinking and it's exciting. There are a lot of great circular economy intentions out there, so let's make them real. Our next story from the transportation section of the Optimist Daily, Britain to invest $2.5 billion into cycling and walking after the pandemic. This story falls into the category of so many of the stories that we've written about a transition to cycling and walking. We wrote one about Milan and certainly one in the Netherlands, and I know that in California here, we're looking into those as options as well. The UK is viewing the coronavirus pandemic as an opportunity to reduce crowding on public transport and gridlock on roads. To do this, the UK has announced a £2 billion package, that's 2.5 US, to put cycling and walking at the heart of Britain's post-corona transportation plan. While it will certainly contribute to a greener and healthier recovery in the wake of the pandemic, data suggests getting more people to bike in the UK is actually an uphill battle. According to Cycling UK, cycling accounted for 1.7% of all trips in 2018, a figure that barely changed for at least 17 years. While 16.7% of people cycled or walked to work that year, two-thirds drove or took a taxi. Cycling made up only 1% of all the mileage accumulated by all vehicular road traffic. Across the North Sea, meanwhile, bicycles are prioritized over cars in the Netherlands, and the Danish capital, Copenhagen, is one of the most cycling-friendly cities on the planet. In 2016, 41% of trips to work and school in Copenhagen took place on bicycles. The city's goal by 2025 is 50%. At rush hour, parents navigate major roads with kids and their bikes or cycling beside them. There's a famous traffic playground where kids under 8 go to learn to ride a bike in a mini version of the city with traffic lights and pedestrian walkways and other urban features. According to one study, 76% of Danes feel safe biking. In London, 96% reported feeling unsafe out on the roads. The UK's new plan is meant to address that by investing money into interventions that will make cycling and walking safer, such as wider sidewalks and cyclists-only streets. The government will bring forward a national cycling plan in June to try and double cycling and increase walking by 2025. It will trial the use of e-scooters and get rental schemes up and running in the city and publish statutory advice for councils to accommodate cyclists and walkers. Transport Secretary Grant Shapps has pitched the plan as a once-in-a-generation opportunity to change how people travel, and has said that one of the few good things to come from this crisis will be lower levels of air pollution, which he said results in 20,000 excess deaths a year. I have family in the cycling industry. Oddly enough, while things have retracted, we have started to see in the family business an increase in purchases of bicycles, which more or less we kind of thought that that business was sort of winding down, and we're actually starting to see it ramp up unexpectedly. So I think cycling is definitely something that will continue to be on the rise.
It's great. And I think I'm seeing that people are all around me are getting their bikes refurbished, getting them cleaned up so that they can actually use it for exercise and for transportation. And as the streets get quieter, or maybe even convert into carless streets, it makes it easier and more accessible for more people. And I think this is a great outcome.
And certainly if people start working closer to home or from home, the need for that long drive to work is alleviated. It all kind of works together.
Love it. Our next story also talks about air quality and how to get away from pollution being a killer. It's from the environment section of Optimist Daily. The EPA proposes first carbon dioxide standards for airline industry. Despite being low in demand, the airline industry could be getting some greener regulations in the near future. For the first time in the history of aviation, the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, proposed carbon dioxide standards for the airline industry last week. Although the EPA has not publicly released their proposed regulations, many environmental organizations, such as the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute, have been pushing the regulatory agency to impose stricter oversight of the airline industry since 2010. The institute has sued the Obama and Trump administrations in 2010, 2014, and 2016 in an attempt to increase airline emission regulations. After the 2016 court confirmation that aircraft pollution is indeed a threat to public health and well-being, the EPA is finally proposing regulations. While the current EPA is unlikely to take a forceful stand in regulating carbon dioxide at this time, it's a good first step. It's likely that they will codify the standards set by the United Nations International Civil Aviation Organization, or the ICAO, which, while not very stringent, are at least a baseline. Many aircrafts flying in the U.S. today are already meeting these standards. But stricter regulations are badly needed. Planes are expected to generate 43 metric gigatons of carbon dioxide by 2050 after airline operations resume post-COVID-19. So what would a more effective regulation look like? The Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute says capping emissions at 2020 levels is a wonderful start. Next, they propose forcing airlines to reduce emissions by at least 50% from 2005 levels by the time we get to 2050. Investing in greener forms of efficient travel like high-speed trains is another great option. Additionally, the U.S. could follow Norway's footsteps. This country has committed to electrifying all flights by 2040. And that's probably a moonshot goal, Summers, but I love the idea of actually bringing electric air travel to reality.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of moonshot goals, we have some moonshot goals for the Optimist Daily Update. Christy and Amelia and I have been working on this, as we mentioned, since February, and we are setting a goal of having more than 1,000 listeners a day within 1 month's time. So in order to do that, in order to hit that moonshot goal, we need all of your help to share the Optimist Daily with your friends, your family, and tell us if you have any ideas on how we can further the message. Christy, I'm going to wrap this up here because we've got to get to some marketing calls today for Optimist Daily. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. As always, we promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for good. We promise to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And in addition to commenting on the Optimist Daily Update, giving us a rating wherever you're listening, please consider becoming an emissary on the optimistdaily.com. And for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be a part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Thanks so much, Summers, and thanks everybody for listening.
Have a great Tuesday, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.